Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Record.
It's recording already.
Record. Right. So, ladies and gentlemen, Goblins and Ghouls, welcome back. It's almost as if you've never been away. Welcome back to our Beast Double Bill. Last time we watched The Dummy.
Hang on. We haven't done the Goblins and Ghouls. You normally say Goblins and Ghouls, blah, blah, blah. This is the...
Yeah. But we're carrying straight on, isn't it? It's just one episode.
I'm going to release them. It's two separate ones.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Sorry, man.
Leave all that in, though, please, because I like all that.
Okay. Britain. An ancient kingdom with legends of violence, cruelty, and torment in its blood. Join your hosts, Ross, John, and James, as they bravely tread where few would dare. Witness their journey into the horrific history of British horror. They are... The General Witchfinders.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls, welcome back to the
episode number, hold on,
I've scrolled down, I've gone past it. Welcome back to part two of the 44th episode of the General Witchfinders podcast. I'm James in Bournemouth in Southern England.
So that's episode 44B, James.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm John Pountney and I am here. I went a bit thingy in the undergrowth then, didn't I? What's his name? I'm here. David Bellamy.
Yeah, there was a Bellamy vibe going on.
And I do look a bit like him as well tonight. Yeah. I look tired.
Shrunk down with with like ladybirds and stuff. That was my favourite.
Shrunk down with ladybirds.
Remember, there was a programme and they shrunk him down and he was
like with blue screen.
Yeah.
I see. Or colour separation overlays, yeah. The BBC would have it. I'm John Pountney and I'm in South Wales, which is still, as we speak, clinging on to the south of Wales.
I'm Ross in Dorchester, and this time we watched...
Which is in Southern England.
I'm Ross in Dorchester, Southern England. This time we watched During Barty's Party.
Do you bath just to get clean? Or to entice? Entice your man with Peccadillo. Peccadillo foam bath. Peccadillo. Autumn. It's a time for remembering old friends and old times and antifreeze. Remember your cousin.
Right, so welcome back, dear listener. It's almost as if you've never been away. Last time we watched, worked just as well the second time, we watched The Dummy from the infamous anthology series by General Witchfinders hero Nigel Neal. We now leave the smashed up movie set of The Dummy with its snarling, Y-fronts wearing, jilted actor. And... etc. Apologies to anyone listening to this podcast on their headphones.
Or eating their tea.
Please don't sue us, yeah. And join Angie and Roger Truscott in their secluded Hampshire. I think Alton, Ross. I had a look on the map. Mm-hmm. I think it's Alton.
Okay.
Their secluded Hampshire home for During Barty's Party. Mm. This episode features the only actual beasts as the main threat. In this case, large, super evolved, intelligent rats.
And where have we met them before?
Mm. Exactly, John. Exactly. More on this to come. Elizabeth Sellers plays Angie Truscott, known for the Mummy Shroud. And Anthony Bates plays Roger Truscott, heavily channeling Michael Bryant's Peter Brock character from the Stone Tape. Another absolute icon of this podcast.
Shouting.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
As you can see here, I've written shouting, shouting, shouting.
Vermin, vermin, vermin.
Brilliant.
You know what a rat sounds like.
It says Bates was cast as Dr. Fendelman in Image of the Fendel. But Fendel. What is Image of the... What is that? I don't even know what
it's
that is.
It's season 15, I think, story of Tom Baker.
Right. So it's another Doctor Who reference.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
That's right. Okay, but he drops out with Dennis Lill taking the role. Colin Bell plays Barty Willis, the local DJ hosting the titular Barty's Party, his regular rock and roll radio show. Like the rest of the cast, Bell is only heard, not seen. He is seen, however, in The Sea Devils and Invasion of the Dinosaurs, both John Pertwee stories. Yet another Doctor Who. Ross. We've got to start changing this up, guys. Come on now.
So many actors from that era.
Of course.
He was probably in Porridge as well, or Survivors.
Yeah. Or Doomwatch. Yikes.
So, it says Norman Mitchell plays the police sergeant. Supposedly at 18, Mitchell walked from Sheffield to London to become an actor, leading to nearly 200 film appearances, 500 radio broadcasts, and an estimated 2,000 television appearances. He developed a niche of playing policemen, appearing as such in 12 episodes of the, quite frankly, weird and disturbing ITV children's TV show from the late 70s, early 80s, Wurzel Gummidge, Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell, more on this very soon, apparently, and now the screaming starts! !
That's
Oliver!
One.
! And the first Doctor Who Christmas episode, The Feast of Stephen. And I did not know this. Jonathan Rhys-Davies plays Peter Newell. Famous, of course, for... What? No. No, this is dreadful, Ross. And as usual, dear listener... I've not even looked at the script until I've come to record it. Standard practice. But then, right, it says Jonathan Rhys-Davies, and I'm preparing myself to read a number of things about the beloved genre actor who appeared as Salah in three of the Indiana Jones movies.
Dreadful Brexit man now, isn't he?
Well, this is just what I'm finding out, and it's shaken me to my core. So, for the sake of everybody else, oh God, this is really depressing. Oh, so famous for his parts in Lord of the Rings as Gimli and Raiders of the Lost Ark, Rhys-Davies is a supporter of the British Conservative Party. Mm. Rhys-Davies was a radical leftist in the 60s who tried to heckle a young Tory MP, but the parliamentarians shot down the first two hecklers in such a brilliant fashion that I decided I ought to once for shut up and listen. The MP in question was Margaret Thatcher.
No
apparently.
Way.
Oh. He is a supporter of Brexit.
Ugh. Yeah.
On the 25th of April, 2019, he appeared as a panelist on the BBC's, quite frankly, abysmal Question Time. That's my thoughts, not Ross's.
That's on the poster.
Oh, dear. His conduct on the programme towards politician Caroline Lucas was later described as thuggish and sexist by some viewers. And disappointing. Never meet your heroes. And not that he was a massive hero of mine, but, you know, he always seems like such a jocular and a, you know, kind of happy-go-lucky fellow and what have you. And, oh, my God, that's really depressing.
Right. Yeah, he's dreadful in real life.
I went to a horror film festival in Bournemouth recently called Screams by the Sea. Mm. And it was a lot of kind of very low-budget horror films, but there was a short bit in the middle with short films. And there was a really good one about a lady who was living on a farm with her old father who had dementia, who was played by John Rhys-Davies.
Wow.
But it turns out like he was actually a vampire. And then loads of like Catholic policemen came in and killed him. But it was
Catholic
really good.
Policeman.
Yeah, a bit like, oh, it was okay. A bit like, you know, it was a bit like Ultraviolet, but he was really, really good at that. And it was it was probably the best thing I saw on that weekend.
So let's crash on with this one then. So with this one starts off with, it starts off with like a car in a country lane.
Yeah, I love the beginning.
And it starts off, and my first note just says the steering wheel cover.
Yeah.
And you don't really you really don't get steering wheel covers anymore. They seem not to be so much from a bygone era, don't they?
Yeah, I used to have a leopard print one.
Yeah, my daughter saw one today in a car. She said, "Oh, look, that car's got like a fluffy steering wheel." And I said, "Oh, yeah,
wow, there's
a
lot more."
And it also had a novelty gear stick.
It did.
You used to get a lot more stuff like that. There used to be a wonderful shop in Scarborough opposite Boyser's, which specialised in a lot of automobilia of that standard, which was like things to kind of customise your car.
Yeah, my dad had a billiard ball one.
Were great.
Yeah.
I think my friend in college had an 8-ball on his gear knob in his VW Beetle. But I think the car at the start is an Austin Healey 3000 a non-standard colour, but it might be some kind of kit car based on the Austin Healey 3000 because it's quite hard to tell what it is. Later on in the script, she refers to it as quite a new car, which it certainly isn't, I don't think.
Well, it might have been at the time.
Well, it might have been at the time, but I don't think you'd have called it quite a new car.
And whereas the her husband immediately corrects her and tells, like he does all the way through this, it completely sort of patronises her. And
yes.
It's just a kit car.
I've written here that Nigel Neal doesn't write women very well. And then I've written after it, maybe he doesn't write anybody very well.
No.
Because his characters are often quite grumpy. Is the women in his
a frail,
frail, weak-minded, kind of
confused,
susceptible to kind of suggestion and stuff. That's Jane Asher. That's Barbara thingy in Quatermass and the Pit, the film version. Obviously, she is the one that gets taken over by the alien spaceship and stuff. I can't think of one really strong female character in
There's those old people who live in the junk pile in the last Quatermass one, which is played by Ethel off of EastEnders. They were quite good.
And bearing in mind, his good lady wife was Judith Kerr, the author who wrote The Tiger That Came to Tea, of course.
Yes!
Yeah. And Hitler stole my Pink Rabbit or something like that, which is excellent. That was her as well, wasn't it?
Mm.
And there's a wonderful photo of her which sat with a cat, I think. And that's the cat in the story,
mm-hmm.
I think. So anyway, So you see the Austin Healey. It's a non-standard colour, folks. It looks like Inca yellow, which is a Triumph colour. Or is it Aztec yellow? I can't remember which. And you hear a lot of screaming.
Mm.
And then you kind of fade into a very 70s bedroom, which either looks like a bedroom from Survivors or from Stigma. Which we've watched in this podcast, haven't we? Peter Bowles shouting in his Volvo. there's no dialogue for quite a long time, and then the first thing we hear is the horror, the most horrific thing that we've ever dealt with on this podcast, and that is Shout by Lulu.
Now, dear listener, this is not set up in any way, shape, or form. John and I have not spoken to each other about this beforehand.
Like
if I hold down my notes, and if I point, what does my note say? It says, "The horror of Lulu."
That's the new title.
New
for
title
this
of
podcast,
the podcast.
The Horror of Lulu.
Supposedly
something that Jason Orange has partaken of.
Absolutely.
First. Or was it Howard Donald? I can't remember which.
It's one of the two.
Oh, bro.
That's not, too much.
That's not staying in. Much, that's not staying in.
But it's quite remarkable.
Just beep it out and then leave your laughter in.
That That fact about Lulu having some sexual congress with a member of Take That, right? Because I remember that as well, and I only saw that documentary once because it was all about Take That, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it must have only just been, but it's like that stayed with me, along with, of course, Gary Barlow's tax avoidance, which as a teacher I will mention every single time. You're stealing money out of my pockets, Barlow. I won't forget.
Has he given it back now? He's probably given it back now.
Anyway, but yeah, I remember that, John. Anyway, yeah, so Lulu, moving on. Sorry,
she's sort of woken up as if she heard the screaming, but then she's acting very sort of weird. And
but it becomes apparent that she thinks it's part of a dream, doesn't it? Because she's taken a pill. And she's had a drink. I don't know how much you fucking drunk today, you stupid woman. That's basically how her husband talks to her.
Catch up.
So he comes in, pours himself a jug of whiskey.
You missed out on the cars, John. There's some nice.
He arrives home. Quite interestingly, this is all on a soundstage.
Yeah.
There's an actual driving car with its engine running. Pulling into the garage, isn't there? So I hope they had the back door open that day.
And they built the whole garage and they never go back to it. So they
it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah, two cars.
So he's got a Rover P6 and she's got a Mini, and I've written Rover P6 in the studio and a Mini for the wife. And this is how cars were marketed back then, that Minis were just for women to go shopping in, and then the man of the house would have a bigger car. Which would be like the Rover, or it'd be Ford Granada or something like that.
You've just got to be careful you don't drive your Mini behind a van with someone dressed up as an alien in the back, because then you might just get a little bit freaked out and crash into a pile of sand.
Throw that for anyone thinking that Ross has maybe had a stroke there. That is what happens at the start of the Stone Tape.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Jean Ash, she's driving a Mini along, and then she's...
It's an Austin Max.
Oh, it's okay. That's why I fucked it up.
Yeah. I thought that was something that we had done in college or something.
No.
So he comes in, takes the record off, and I've written, I'd smash the record if I'd...
And why do you say rock and roll? You'd have liked this.
Yeah.
So why would they have it in the house?
It's not really rock and roll. And it's weird to think that at that point, that record is literally only about 11 years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now like, you know, 11 years ago now is something that came out in like 2013.
Yeah. Mm. But also like the thing that he was shocked that she was playing it.
Yes.
And she admits that she doesn't like it, but it was the only record. But it was the only record next to the record player. So if she they don't like it and they're surprised they have it, why have they got it in the house?
Well, it's the daughter's record, isn't it?
I think.
But obviously, this being 1976, what she could have had on was Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols, which would have done a much better job.
Holiday in the Sun.
When I'm watching things like this, I do, as you know, like to imagine what's happening outside of the studio when they've left to go to the pub. Do they go to the pub after recording this and discuss Grundy and Johnny Rotten?
You
nothing,
filthy
a rude, what, you dirty.
You filthy fucker.
Do they all go and discuss that? I mean, it's just, it's brilliant. Does it all exist in the same universe? Mm-hmm. So we vision, a bit like the last episode, we vision mixing again rather than editing. But it does work a bit better in this one, I think.
So there's fewer people and it's a much smaller set. And I think this is where it works better.
Yes.
It absolutely feels like a stage play.
Mm. Yes.
As I was watching it, it's all set up and feels like, even though, as John rightly says, you know, they built this large bit for the car to go into. Once they're both in the house together, it really feels like a stage
play. And I really like the fact that they're the only ones in it, and all the other... Everything else is phone calls, radio, or someone outside. I really like that. It works really well.
It made me think a lot of the Road radio play.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think for me, it was like a radio play with pictures because there's a lot. I feel like there's a lot of exposition in the dialogue, which is a bit like when you know, in a radio play, it's like, why are you holding that knife?
Mm-hmm.
And why are you stop pointing that knife at me? Oh my God, you're coming closer. It's like that, isn't it? This was a little bit like that. I just want to say Truscott is one of Helen's, my partner, Hel, for the listeners, is one of her familial names on her mother's side. Ooh. And it's the name, the real name of Ray Milland, who is rumoured to be related to Helen Martin.
Wow.
So who's that person you said? Ray Milland?
Ray Milland. He's a famous Hollywood actor, Cleves.
Oh, okay.
And he was, I think he won an Oscar for something, The Lost Weekend, I think it was called. He's in quite a few horror genre films later on in his career. He's in one with Peter Cushing where cats, I think he's killed by cats.
Okay.
But his real name was Truscott.
I felt like this was very similar to Baby, where there's a woman left at home on her own, who's sounds like they might have lived in the city before, but they've now moved to the country.
Yeah,
she's sort of like going a bit nuts because she's been isolated, left on her own.
Women can't bear to be alone, can they?
No, and all they're doing is waiting for their husbands to come home, and then they bluster in.
Yeah.
Have you forgotten to make dinner? And just basically dismiss anything the woman says to them. Starts getting drunk straight away.
Yeah. Basically what I do.
Yeah, and just shouts.
Check. It's quite lazy writing, and I hadn't thought of the baby parallel until you pointed it out. And I think if you'd watch this and Baby was on last week or whatever, you'd be like,
this is the same story.
Yeah, the guy needs to get some new ideas, Nigel Neal.
Yeah.
I've said there's the annoying subtext of women being hysterical, and I think it is really annoying in this. There is also the idea of perception in fear, and how you perceive something can ruin your day if you suffer from anxiety or whatever. The way you perceive something can really knock you off kilter. That is an interesting idea for writing, but not done in the way that it's done here.
But one of the things, when I watched this the first time, I was thinking, this is quite sexist. They're always making out the women are weak and can be there's overbearing men shouting. But then when I watched it the second time, I was like, the men are weak in this as well. And if you think about some of his other stories, the men are always weak, but they use this bluster and bravado and stuff to sort of try and like mask the fact that they are weak and unsure themselves.
Yeah.
Because he only gets angry when she kind of like sticks up for herself. Because the rest of the time he's like jovial and kind of like just trying to sort of like talk her out of this whole kind of thing where she doesn't feel good and she feels weird and stuff. But if she starts, pushing back a bit too hard, that's when he gets angry and quite insulting towards her. And then later on, there's a bit when he ends up like crying and like being weak, and she's the one who's trying to save him.
Yes.
And I think actually it's not, I think he's equally scathing to men and women in this. It's not just anti-women.
Essentially, yes. And I think what Nigel Neal would say in his defense if he wasn't dead is that everyone is weak, and it's, everyone is blustering and trying to muscle on through or whatever. But I think that's because we've watched so many of his things now, I think that's kind of slightly lazy because
it's the same thing every time.
He does it in in literally almost everything. Where besides Professor Quatermass, who is obviously unrufflable. I mean, we're not talking about the film version now, but in the TV versions, he's unrufflable and very stoic. Everyone else is just goes raving mad. And obviously they go raving mad in this. Like the husband by the end goes absolutely full. Nuts. I've written he's gone full bananas. But he comes home and I think you can hear rats quite soon, can't you? And then it's like, where's the dog? And Buster the dog has run off. And then Buster cops for it because he says, the dog's fucking useless.
Yeah, but he's even a dick to the dog. Like, he opens the door and he's like, Buster, stupid dog.
Yeah. So there's an amazing tracking shot where he opens the back door and he calls for the dog. And then there's quite a nice tracking, the camera tracks in on him. And I thought, that's done really well. If that's done on a vision mixed kind of live studio setup. And then you hear something in the bushes outside, but he doesn't go to look, and then he goes back and locks the door. Mm. So as it started off, I thought, God, 50 minutes of him shouting and her being hysterical is going to be quite annoying. But I've got about halfway through my notes, I've said, there's a good feeling of impending doom. Good example of a way to fill 50 minutes with only two people, which is a really interesting. It's a bit like Locke, that film with.
Yes.
Who's in that now? What's his name? Tom. Is it
Tom Hardy?
Yes.
Where it's just him and his Range Rover.
Yeah. So he rings various people, doesn't he, throughout this journey. And this is a bit like that, where they turn the radio on and they hear some snatches of stuff and they ring some people and blah, blah, blah. This is a bit like that, where it's a kind of exercise in filling 50 minutes with events.
Oh, hello. Could I speak to the
field, please? Oh, I'm afraid he's not home yet.
Anything?
No. Would you like to leave a message?
No, I'll catch him another time.
Oh, just a minute.
Hmm?
I think he's here now.
Oh, good. Just got in.
Here we are.
Peter, Roger Truscott.
Oh, hello.
Peter Tuard, I've been home for ages.
Well, I've got a bloody sight further to go, old boy.
Well, I won't keep it from that drink. Just one small PS to what we agreed.
Here we go.
On the second stage layoff, I think the limit ought to be 9.25%.
Hmm. Yeah, fair enough. You're not taking.
That's all. I'll leave it with you.
Right. Hey, listen. What about that crap on the radio?
Crap?
Well, you have got a car radio.
Of course.
Well, then.
I will listen to the music.
Lord, you miss everything. They get the most marvelously funny items. Well, they had this bit, and it made me think about you. It was about your part of the universe.
Peter.
And I thought to myself, old Truscott, he'll be listening to this. I wonder if he's seen anything.
Seen what?
The bloody rat migrations.
Oh, a joke item.
Rather more freaky than jokey. Reports about rats crossing country roads. People have seen them, thousands of them.
Yeah, sounds very amusing.
No, perfectly serious.
Yeah, one for your collection.
It does happen. I've read about it. Bloody columns of rats on the march.
Well, since I didn't hear it,
I signed. But apparently they can be very nasty.
Yeah, Peter, I won't keep you from that drink any longer.
Oh. Putting the wind up you, am I? Oh, sorry, old boy. Sorry.
9.25%, all right?
All right. Be seeing you.
Right, bye, Peter.
Bye.
Bloody fool. Once you get started, you can't.
Migrations.
So, essentially, he rings up John Rhys-Davies, who he to talk to him about some business deal.
Is that who it is?
Yeah.
Insurance.
He's the businessman.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then he tells him that, did you hear on the news about this thing where people have been seeing lots of rats all going in columns? Yeah. But somehow the wife hears this conversation, and then she starts going, there's something going on with the rats. And it's almost like it's triggering some memory, which she's repressing.
Yes, and she then starts to worry, and the concern is that the car that we saw at the very opening, of the episode, has been parked opposite the house all day long and been deserted.
And it's still there.
And she feels, that something has happened to them. And the two things that I put, which is very, very 70s, is that the husband dismisses this. First of all, he goes, it's a well-known lover's lane.
Yeah.
And I thought, you don't really get, with the advent of dogging in this country, and I'm very much aware that I am a teacher.
It's fucking doggers again.
And as a result, I'm not setting myself up as an expert on dogging here in any way, shape, or form, anybody.
That's a new title for the podcast.
But since the advent of dogging, you don't get people talking about Lover's Lane anymore, do they?
It's not quite so romantic anymore, is it?
That's right.
He does say having it off. Which
that's exactly what I was about to say, Ross. Yeah. After the 70s-ness, he then says they're probably having it off.
And he says something like, there's not a piece of corn which is not laid flat by the end of the summer.
Which in itself is very James Herbert.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's where this is. So where does this fit in? When was The Rats published?
Well,
that's 2 years before this, wasn't it?
Yes.
Interesting. I was about to say,
because this is my vibe, is that had he read James Herbert's The Rats?
Yeah.
And then
this
feels like it's like a cut chapter from The Rats, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
So there's in that field, there's a tramp having his cock gnawed off with someone else, with rats hanging off their pendulous bosoms.
This feels like
lots of pubes.
Oh, yeah, don't you remember?
Yeah.
When we read it, that he went into great detail.
About tugging someone's pubes in the bath.
That's it.
Jesus Christ. This feels very much like a prologue to Lair, which is the second Rats, part of the Rats trilogy. And what year did that come out?
Oh, I'm not sure.
79 or something like that?
When was Lair? To say there's a really good Rats t-shirt available on our General Witchfinders t-shirt store. Go to generalwitchfinders.com.
Smooth.
Yeah.
Smooth as silk there.
I think that a writer like Nigel Neal must have been aware of the Rats at that point. Even knowing Nigel Neal, he probably poured great scorn on it. Like, he poured scorn on absolutely everything.
Lair was 1979.
Is that what I said? I think I said 79.
I'm not sure, yeah.
So James Herbert himself might have seen this episode on networked ITV at some point in 1976.
It was on a Ouroboros rat circle.
Okay.
What's he saying?
I think he's trying to say Ouroboros.
Yeah.
As in, it's a self-perpetuating cycle.
Oh, I
see.
Snake
in
his
own tail,
yes.
Of rats.
Ouroboros.
Generating itself. Anyway, so meanwhile, back to it. The wife then decides that she's going to turn on the radio, and it's a sound system / stereo that I've said a whole forest must have been decimated to build. The amount of wood in that thing is enormous.
Yeah,
yes.
It's enormous. A substantial piece of furniture, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Nicely put, Ross. Indeed it is. So she puts on the radio and as I put, that's the title.
Oh, because yeah. Because what the fuck?
There's no party.
Yeah, there's no party. And I think people are going to turn up in a minute.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But then we find out that she listens to a radio program. And I won't lie, this is something else I was going to talk to you guys about. It's weird. And I was like, I don't remember, obviously, but I was born as we all were, right at the tail end of the 70s.
Mm.
But it's like, is this what radio sounded like in the 70s?
I think it still sounds weird. Like that, James. You need to live
local
in Wales
radio.
If you're to listen to Red Dragon FM. It's, I just thought this sounds like Steve Wright in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It's just the horror of commercial radio, isn't it? The same adverts every 6 minutes.
Yeah, Radio U-Tree.
Are we going to discuss Dot Cox later? Are we going to?
Yes, I think so. It's only a matter of time.
That's the something horrific for this week, isn't it?
And so, yes, so the local radio DJ then starts mentioning that, we've had a few weird, strange calls where some people, and don't quote me on this, but they sound like they might be slightly mad, have called up and said, there's rats. That's right. Rats, not bats. You know, it's like this. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
Where he basically then says, lots of people have rung up saying that they've seen columns of rats marching around. And the wife is like, see, I told you. I told you.
Took the cough. And then that's when he starts beating the floor of a poker, going, vermin.
And that's my line that I wrote down that he's put right on the bastard. He smashes it. He stamps on the floor and shouts right on the bastard.
He pulls out a chainsaw and he cuts the radio in half. And then he chops his own head off and he's still shouting on the floor. His head's on the floor shouting about rats.
Whatever happened to our beautiful evening?
I hate the sound.
Shut up!
You in your bed? All lumps and bumps and agony?
Oh,
don't miss the big bedding
event. Put it
up. There might be something.
Starting Monday. And now, back to
Mrs. Potty Wills giving you Potty's Potty.
Anyway, it's funny.
You listen to them?
Sometimes.
And this is your party. And now. The studio is filled with the past, with mildew and cobwebs and old people from the 60s, like these.
For goodness sake.
So yeah, so this is the point where I've written shouting, 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 and then I've written the horror of commercial radio. So we've got the horror of Lulu and the horror of commercial radio this week,
yes,
haven't we?
But yes, so she rings up the station, doesn't she? Because there's an expert on there who's talking about that.
But he rings up the police first, and the policeman doesn't believe him, really, does he? And just says,
dismisses it.
Ring the council in the morning, you idiot.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, okay, jolly good.
Yeah, and they realise the rats have followed them around. That was the cliffhanger for the
yes, end of part one.
Yeah.
Unusual episode structure, I thought, where it's like 30 minutes to the ad break and then like 20 minutes after the ad break, not two equal parts of 25 minutes, which I thought was quite interesting.
That's also in keeping with sort of like the stage play esque, because often when you go and see most plays, the act two is always shorter than act one.
Oh, okay.
Normally when you go. But anyway,
I'm not a regular theatre goer, to be honest. Hmm. Then I've just written hysteria.
Radio. I was going to say my only local radio thing, because it's now, it was called 2CR.
Yeah, Two Counties Radio.
Amazing.
Which is now being subsumed under the Heart Network, you know, the generic Heart
Network.
So Dorset
and where?
Country. Hampshire.
Yeah.
Dorset and Hampshire.
Hampshire's next to Dorset?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
And then Somerset the other way.
And to that extent, that 2CR, before it got subsumed under the Heart Network, there used to be a show called Late Night Love with Graham Torrington, which was amazing. And I don't know if it was like syndicated or not. I hope not. But I would occasionally tune in the hope of hearing someone that I knew bringing up and like exposing the dark furniture of their hearts, because it was like a whole show of Our Tune by Simon Bates, which again, there's one for the teenagers. On Radio 1 in the 1980s, Simon Bates, the DJ, became very, very popular. People would write in with like a their inevitably sad love stories to do with their lives. And then he'd be like, and here's a record to remind them of that time together. And people loved it. So like the whole show was like this, and it was people going, look, just if she's listening, and just like crying on it, just tell her I really love her. Just tell her I love her and I want her back. I know I've made some mistakes, but if you are listening. And so it was, the dreadful, dreadful, you know, like the voyeur in me was just like, and the part of us that likes to slow down and look at a car crash. I used to really enjoy listening to these people's tragic lives. And then it was always like, come on, please be somebody I know just once. But yeah, that's just my late night radio thoughts and local radio thoughts.
Graham Torrington.
Graham Torrington.
Has presented on the aforementioned BBC WM and CWR.
Wow, it's all coming together.
The show is still broadcast on Berkshire and North Hampshire's Glow Radio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was networked by Global Radio.
Yeah.
I think that's how you will have heard it, James.
Yes.
He presented it for 12 years, and it had over 1 million listeners on 41 UK radio stations.
There you are.
He's still going, Graham Torrington.
I wonder if there's a
very
late night love podcast.
He did not do any updates on columns of rats.
Love rats,
which
maybe.
Is a shame. Love rats. Perhaps.
He's at age 64 now.
There is a late night love podcast.
Wow. Is there? Mm-hmm. From by Graham.
Let's have a look. Well, you've got unscripted discussions, everything about love. I'm not sure. James O'Just is doing that.
We're not interested.
That's
in
not
we
me.
Want, we
That's
only
not
want
me
Torrington,
with a pseudonym,
don't we? Torrington. Torrington.
Torrington.
Torrington.
How do you spell that? How do you spell it?
T-O-R-R-I-N-G. Are you going to drop some bits into the podcast, please?
If I can find any of them.
Late Night Love. Real lives. Real people. Real relationships. Late Night Love. Late Night Love.
So why are you in a relationship you're not happy in?
Kind of hard to get out of it, really, because I broke up with her before and I've had problems with her parents.
So you're sticking with her because her parents think that you should be with her?
Yeah.
Her parents are piling on the pressure here and saying, well, you should be with that daughter. She's the girl for you. Well, I'd be saying, well, I'll make... That's my decision, not your decision. What's he said about what he's done to you?
He apologises. He didn't mean to do it.
He didn't mean to do it. Cracked rib and a broken collarbone?
He disagreed with something I was saying.
Please don't go back to this man. He's going to end up killing you. It's going to get worse, not better.
Please stay away. Find somebody else. The only thing a bad man does in this world is keep a good man away.
I'm actually trying to get you to actually say how you feel about it.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it.
So why are you putting yourself through it then?
Because every woman has her needs, I suppose.
Every man has his needs. Every person has their needs. She's got you wrapped around a little finger, hasn't she?
Yeah, pretty much.
Does
it
actually come home to you exactly what you are allowing her to put you through?
It may sound pretty stupid, yeah.
You're saying it, not me.
Late night love, late night love. Three lives.
You need professional help because a man of your age should not be with a girl of 16. Your daughter is 7 years older.
Fantasy, commitment, taboo. If it happens in real life, we talk about it. Graham Torrington. Late night love.
Thinks of a man writing a one-star review right now.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. They spent 5 minutes talking about Nigel Neal.
Nigel Neal.
They spent 40 minutes talking about local radio.
The horror of local radio. It is, I mean, we used to have, my dad used to have a radio on in the milking parlour. And okay. It must have been only on long wave because it was a terrible whistling reception. But I remember that it was adverts for Aubrey Allen's Got Meat. We've got all kinds of meat that you're wanting to eat. Aubrey Allen's, which is a butcher's chain in Coventry.
I always remember your dad having football on in the car, James, but it was like, it was like it was being transmitted from the moon or something.
So yes, it was a medium wave.
Medium wave and long wave is where it's at. It's so atmospheric. Mm. And when I put, I tried to listen to Five Lives through my phone recently when I was setting up the exhibition in Abbotrida, and I couldn't handle it without the bad reception. Mm. It didn't sound right.
So, but what this film reminded me, have you seen a film called? Written it down here. Pontypool.
Pontypool. Yes, I'm aware of it.
So
it's almost like.
Tell you what, I've also been to the place, please.
But but it's the American film Pontypool. So it's almost like this film in reverse. It's where.
I went to see it in Chapter.
Yeah, it's like some kind of sort of end of world event happening outside of the radio station, and the guy is in the DJ is like receiving calls into the station about what's happening. And that was that was really good.
But it's spread through language, isn't it? Yes. Zombification. Mm. Yeah, it's a good film. And I think they've done it recently as a stage play that's come into Cardiff, maybe. I will say that watching this, I've been asked to revisit my Party at the End of the World zombie script. And I did think that this episode is a good, or this story is a good kind of exercise in building a sense of dread and prolonging a sense of, I don't know what, it's just dread, isn't it? Mm. You feel that something's going to go wrong and then you get towards the end. Are we towards the end?
I can't remember. So basically they're sort of stuck in the house. You can hear all the scratching coming from underneath.
He's going to make chlorine gas, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is. And also, she then rings in to Barty's party.
Yes. That's where we got to. Yes. Yes.
And there's loads of feedback.
Yes. She's got her radio around. Mm. And she goes a bit mental. But then they get cut off while she's having a breakdown. And she's described with the rats and stuff to the DJ. But they've misheard her name and they've said Prescott, not Truscott.
Yes.
Mm. So then that's when he goes totally bananas then, isn't it?
Yes. There's a really good bit of it though, where she thinks she doesn't realize she's been cut off. So she's still thinking she's having a conversation.
And then he's talking to her.
Yeah, and then they said, "Oh, we can't hear her anymore." And yeah, yes. And then they're trying to send help, but to the, like you said, to the wrong place.
To the wrong people. But they're also sending the right help, but not necessarily in the right order.
Yes, and also I did put, thank God the competition is still going to be going ahead tomorrow night. Marty goes out of his way to go, look, everybody, this is an emergency, but I will reassure you, the competition will go ahead. The scheduled competition. I was like, oh my God, thank Christ. People's lives are in danger, but it's all right. The competition to inevitably win some Alvin Stardust.
So then LPs. They think they're going to make a run for it. So they go and get what everyone's got in their cupboard, a cupboard of fencing masks.
Fencing masks.
Yeah.
To protect their faces.
Bit, I loved that bit.
Yeah.
We're going to go for the car, but the car is inside. So why did they need to put, that bit was weird, wasn't it?
But you see some stuff, and I've got to say, at no point you see a rat. You start seeing something gnawing through the doors.
That's a very obvious ploy, isn't it? And part of it that you don't see a rat at any point. And that's what made me think that it's like a radio play, that it deliberately you don't see this, what is meant to be the scary object. And then you suddenly hear voices from next door. The next door neighbors have come back. So it's like, oh, thank God,
yeah.
Back to normality.
Oh, everything's going to be all right.
But then you hear, you don't see, but you hear and you watch them react to the rats attacking the next door
neighbors. The family, yeah.
And eating them.
Overwhelming them, yes.
Yes. And then that's when he's gone fully bananas by then, hasn't he, the husband?
Yeah.
And then they run upstairs. And I think then it's implied that they have been eaten, and is it just the radio just carries on?
Yeah, they said they're in the house. They can see. We can't see the rats, but they're reacting to the rats being in the house, and then it ends.
Yes, yes, yeah.
I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, personally. All in all, I think it was. I mean, the dummy was, like I said, one of the worst things we've ever watched for this podcast, which is quite strange considering it's Nigel Neal, because we've all enjoyed his stuff so much. Mm. This one did make me question a lot of his characterization is quite samey.
It's just, I think like you said, he seems to write a lot of the characters exactly the same. But yes. I do like that. But maybe it's maybe we're starting to hit our sort of oversaturation of Nigel Neal now.
I don't think you can ever have an oversaturation of Nigel Neal. I read a short story by him last night, which is called Minuke, Minuke, and it's about a poltergeist, or kind of well, it's one of his usual themes. It's about a bungalow built on a site, and it's about what lies beneath the bungalow and the kind of supernatural events that occur there. But there's also a kind of sequence where there's maybe a flash forward to an alternative future, which is quite interesting.
Okay.
Where a guy gets a phone call from someone in the house, and that event hasn't happened yet. It's a really good story.
Yeah, so again, cool. Good, great ideas.
But then, he's always got brilliant ideas.
But then maybe he ends up putting the same characters into it. So maybe he just needs to...
Because the story is from literally 1948 or something. So I can't think of anyone that was writing stuff like that in 1948. It's wild, really. He was very unique in his kind of... the way he put existing ideas, but the way you put existing ideas together, I don't think anyone else was doing that. And putting sci-fi and horror together in the way that he did was very, very...
Well, I think this was very effective. And you guys talk about being a play. I can imagine this being an excellent stage play. You could
have speakers
around the thing, so it feels like the rats are under the chairs and all that kind of stuff. Yep. Yeah, that would be excellent.
Yeah. Yes. So... A scores out of scores on the doors?
I'm giving it a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, I think a 3 as well, or a 3.5.
James?
I'm going to go for the 2.5, 2.5.
Interesting, James.
I thought there was some interesting stuff here, as you said, and you know all of that. It would work as a stage play. I really enjoyed the whole kind of like her unraveling. But as you said, the characters are very, you know, kind of very, very boilerplate Nigel Neal, and I could have done with a couple more twists and turns in it. To really start to elevate it.
And it's also very, very much of its time. You're kind of stuck of what they thought they could. It's how men and women were portrayed there, but I think it's almost a bit edgy because, you know, you're showing them having, like we said, like a top level of being a patronising sexist pig, but still having that underbelly that he's actually just as scared as she is, if not more. So, yeah, interesting. Cool.
But that is kind of an obvious way for his character to go, isn't it?
Mm.
That's just kind of like...
Yeah, it could be Steve Peppleton, I reckon, if they did it again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that would be... It could be a bit like the episode... What's the episode of Inside Number 9 where Jesus turns up and they end up stabbing him by mistake?
Oh, I can't remember that one.
Oh, it's very, very good. Is it the last night of the proms or something like that?
Oh, yeah. That's good,
Wow, that blew me away. And it could this could be redone in that way very, very well, couldn't it?
And, of course, that immediately reminds me of another one that we covered on this podcast from Never Trust a Rabbit by Jeremy Dyson, Loving the Time of Molyneux, where it turns out his flatmate is the second coming of Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
And he betrays him.
Is that also Wolves Stadium, James? Do they play it?
Well, yes. Yes, written in exactly the same way.
Yes. There we are. So jolly good. So what are we going to talk about? Doc Cox now?
Well, we could talk about anything horrific. Do you want to talk about that? I went and saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire today.
How was it?
And how was that, Cleves?
Well, everything I heard about it was that everyone was saying it's shit. My brother, who loves Ghostbusters, was saying it wasn't that good. And I was thinking, oh, God, like, he loves everything. But
He loves everything.
Everything Ghostbusters related. Yeah. But Beck wanted to go and see Dune 2, and I'd already seen it. So she took Rowan to see Dune, and I took Talis to go and see Ghostbusters.
Yes.
And it was all right. There's so many fucking characters in it, though. It's got, like, all the original Ghostbusters. It's got all the people out of the last one they did. Yeah. And like, James A. Acaster turns up in it as a new Ghostbuster.
Say, that's why I wouldn't watch it.
So many people.
Who's James A. Acaster?
He's like a stand-up comedian. He does, like...
Is he British?
Yeah.
He does that off-menu. I don't know if you've come across it, John, but it's called the off-menu podcast. I'm calling it out now. I'm sure James A. Acaster won't be losing too much sleep.
Got to watch out. When I went to see him live, he went nuts at some guy and stormed off the stage.
That's right. I remember you telling me about that, Ross, because somebody dared to question his mental health.
Yeah, and he just left. He left like 20 minutes before the end.
Oh, I hate him.
That's what I said. That's why I won't go and see it, John. I think he's a dick.
only got one facial expression in his photos, like a stupid, supercilious,
smug.
Yeah,
smug
twat.
But there's like weird things happen. Like, so you're watching it, and then they go to a place, and like they don't go with a race dance, and they're all talking for ages, and then suddenly he's there, like, and you don't see, and he's wearing sunglasses indoors. And I was like, right, well, maybe that's going to be a thing later on, that he's possessed and he's covering his eyes up. Because no, he's just, I reckon, like, he had his sunglasses on and forgot to take them off, and they just filmed that scene, or something was completely cut out of it, which wasn't.
Yes,
that is what I imagine.
And the whole thing is like called Frozen Empire. And they sort of make, at the beginning, they're sort of getting, oh, it's really hot, and people talk, but then they just forget about that for ages. And the Frozen thing doesn't happen until like 20 minutes before the end. Like,
wow.
And it's like,
Empire is Frozen as well.
Well, that's exactly, there isn't one. It's just like New York.
The Empire State Building.
Yeah. And it's just like, there's loads of stuff in the trailer which isn't in the film. So again, you think, this is being cut to pieces.
No way.
And like,
that's weird. How long is it, Cleves?
Two hours.
Oh my God! Modern films are so long.
And there's so many characters in it. Like at the end, like there's like the big thing. I was thinking, there's about 15 characters like standing there, all dressed as Ghostbusters. And you're like, I don't know like half these people's names now. Like, because they haven't had enough time to introduce who everyone is.
Yes.
So they set up loads of stuff that doesn't go anywhere. Having some kind of like proton thing, like wrist shooting gun thing. But they're having the
lady Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Do they have any lady Ghostbusters? Well, the woman who used to...
No. That's what they had, the like shooting them from the wrist. Oh, right. Lady okay. Ghostbusters.
Yeah. They're non-canonical.
Exactly,
aren't they?
Yeah. But it's just like so much. And like, it's obvious that, you know, Peter Venkman just was like, I'll do 2 days and that's it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so weird. But
I think films like this are very obviously money-making exercises, yes. aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's no.
Yeah,
well,
there's just no kind of love in it, or kind of.
There's no story. It's just like stuff happens. This happens. And there's just lots of like lines which you think, oh, that's meant to be in a. That's a trailer line. That's a trailer line. That's a trailer. People are saying things which there's no like natural conversation ever between anyone. But it was okay.
Despite that, it was actually okay.
Dan Aykroyd is brilliant in it. I was thinking, why isn't Dan Aykroyd in more stuff apart from he's fucking nuts?
Well, also he's quite rich, Ross. He's done all right for himself because Dan Aykroyd said, I will say this: if Dan's listening, his Crystal Skull vodka is lovely.
Yeah, it's pretty similar.
Wow. Really, okay. But it's properly that you can drink it. Like he was on Saturday Kitchen Live or whatever it's called on the BBC talking about it. And he was really good fun. He really threw himself into it.
Yes.
Bearing in mind, you know, and he said, I designed it to be a vodka that's got virtually hardly any after, like, kick.
Yeah.
So it's really smooth. It's beautiful. It's really nice. But he was like, and it's a crystal skull because, of course, the Aztecs are the crystal skull. And he started banging on about all that. And, you know, as Ross says, you do start thinking, he is slightly nuts.
He is nuts.
I read a really good book that was all about sort of like the rise of, sort of like the role of Saturday Night Live and the rise of 1980s comedy and the sort of 80s comedy blockbusters like Beverly Hills Cop and Ghostbusters and things like that. And the writer described Dan Aykroyd as a man who loves both criminals and the police. And they said he's the sort of guy whose dream is to design the perfect crime and then arrest himself for doing it. Which I think they are. And that's really stayed with me.
But I did get, they were giving away badges when I came out of the cinema.
Wow.
Which was like, so I was like, oh, that's just going to get an extra half a star from me. I'm giving me some free.
That can sit in your drawer for the next 40 years.
On the films are maybe too long, but then also going to the cinema, tomorrow night, guys, I'm going to go and see it. I don't know if you've seen this film advertised, Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
It's only an
hour and a half long.
Yesterday. Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah. A couple of people said it's basically Ghostwatch.
Yes. Which is like, and I'll be the judge of that. I thought when I heard that, people were like, oh, it's inspired by the UK's Ghostwatch. I was like, well, come on. As a man who was 15 when Ghostwatch was originally on and was terrified by it, I'll be the judge as to how much this channel's Ghostwatch vibes. But the fact they're even using it as a touchstone for the film, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I always say the guy's name wrong. The main guy in it is, he's not David Dalmatian. That's the dog. But how do you say it?
Know.
Sorry, David.
I don't know his name.
He's a great guy. He's a great actor.
The creepy face.
Yes, David.
I've seen him in photos, but I thought was
Dastmalchian or Dastmalchian. I can't say it. Anyway, I'm really looking forward.
Make your own words up, dear listener.
Because that's all.
Yeah. Him, but I'm really looking forward to seeing that tomorrow. That's going to be good, I think.
My something horrific this week is the career of the British musician and former television journalist Robert Doc, in inverted commas, Cox, born 1st of July 1946. So James and I were discussing him today. I don't know. Did you discuss anything about him, Cleves?
I was at the cinema when this.
Okay. Right.
We should point out for the listener how this came about. And Ross has mentioned on previous episodes that the General Rich Fighters group chat is entertaining.
It's a repository of truly, what's the phrase, Cleves? Mawkish
Cabinet
twaddle.
Of Curiosities.
Yeah. I would call it moronic twaddle.
Moronic twaddle. Yeah, yes. It started off that chat started off as me tweeting pictures of pages from the Unexplained magazine, and then it evolved into our podcast chat. Yeah.
So yeah, the often what we'll do is if we find if I see pictures or things that I know these other two will like, I will share it rather than tweet it. I will just share it directly with them. And today, as people do on Twitter and in your face, Elon Musk, I'm going to continue to call it Twitter.
Yes.
Good man, Sean. Is that somebody reposted an ad from Saturday Night on 1994 on BBC
Saturday
One.
Saturday Night on BBC One.
And of course, this is meat and drink for us because, you know, this was our time as young men and when we would have been watching TV an awful lot.
We had nothing to do on a Saturday night except watch BBC One.
Correct. And of course, it started off with the Paul Daniels magic show. Incredible. But remarkably, halfway through the evening, even though traditionally That's Life used to be on Sundays, wasn't it?
Sundays, but, yes.
Yeah.
That by 94, That's Life had been shunted to a Saturday evening.
It's not a Saturday night program.
It's not. And then John and I started talking about the wrongness of one of the contributors, to that show was a guy, for our international listeners, who used to do novelty songs, in inverted commas, often with strong sexual innuendos.
Yes. And
he is just... I'll let John take it from me.
Well, all I'm going to do is refer you, dear listener, to the Ivor Biggin section of his Wikipedia entry, which reads, just two paragraphs. Under the Biggin name, Cox fronts a humorous band that is sometimes billed simply as Ivor Biggin, or variously, Ivor Biggin and the Red-Nosed Burglars... or Ivor Biggin and the Left-Handed Wankers. Also, Ivor Jivers, Less Rude.
Ross really enjoying this.
Or Ivor Biggin's Vulgar Band. He specialises in double entendre-laden smutty songs.
There's no double entendre in the Left-Handed Wankers. That is an entendre.
That's a single entendre. At best.
Ivor Biggin has released 4 albums of bawdy songs.
4.
And recorded with Judge Dredd, I don't know if that's the actual
not the comic character. Yeah.
And David Screaming Lord Such.
Yeah. Yes. No longer with us.
The most recent being 2005's Handling Swollen Goods.
Dear God.
Johnny Rotten selected the Winkers song, Misprint in brackets, as his single of the week in 1978 when he was a guest reviewer for the New Musical Express. The single sold well, reaching number 22 in the UK singles chart, thanks to Rotten support. However, it was banned by nearly all radio stations due to its explicit lyrics. The singles, Bras on 45, Family Version, credited to Ivor Biggin and the D-Cups, reached number 50 in the UK singles chart in 1981 and remained in the chart for 3 weeks.
And this was on Saturday Night TV.
In many ways, he is like a dreadful dark universe or dark of like Frank Sidebottom.
Yeah.
He was genuinely funny.
Yes. But was born onto mainstream television program. BBC,
yes.
In the 1980s. He was on from 1982 to 1992. Oh.
Dear God.
So I was I've been watching Blackadder recently, and it's...
Yes.
And he plays one of the... Do you remember in Blackadder 3 when there's the election? He's almost like
candidates.
The Monster Raven Loony Party candidate for him.
He now resides in Suffolk, where he's in several pub bands, including the Trembling Wheelbarrows. He is the kind of person that you never want to get stuck with in a pub, I would say, isn't he? One word, Brexit.
Yes, agreed. Absolutely agreed. Terrifying.
You know that Nigel Farage? I don't agree with everything he says, but I tell you what, he's a damn good politician.
He's got some sensible ideas.
He's very sensible ideas. So that is my truly horrific for this week.
There we go.
Is it called truly horrific?
Something horrific.
That, well, that is my truly horrific name for this.
I'm looking at lots of pictures of him at the moment on them.
I bet you are.
Yeah.
With his trembling wheelbarrow.
One episode, I will get round to talking about Lake Mungo, which is a film I really want to recommend.
Well, it's good. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, yeah, come on. Then.
And it's all about photography, John, as well. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Okay, what's, is it on Netflix? Because we're looking for things to watch.
It's on, I think I had to pay for it. It was on Amazon, but it's highly recommended.
I can do that with The Lash Up.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Lake Mungo.
Yeah, it's Australia. Like a found footage.
Okay.
Yeah, 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 it's good.
But spooky. I would say genuinely spooky.
I should recommend, well, this is going to be, this will all come together in the edit, do I?
Yeah.
I should recommend, if you are a fan of Beasts or, you've gone on to
Nigel Neil's
Beast, you've watched all these before or listened to us talk about it, it's made you go away and watch them and enjoy it. I highly recommend, The Book of Beasts by Andrew Screen, which is full of way more information and lots of really interesting articles all about each of the episodes of Beasts. And it was a really good read. There we go. So thank you for sending us a copy of that, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. I never got my copy, though.
I'd also like to salute. This is the sort of thing I would have normally put on social media, but I'm here now. As I was walking home from my weekly visit to my parents this week, I walked past a number of houses. And as is the way, of course, you can see into people's homes.
Oh.
And you can often see what people are watching on TV. Normally, it's whatever is being broadcast by the main channels at that time. But as I walked home tonight, somebody was watching Commando, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Amazing.
And I walked past at the exact moment of the tooling up sequence. You know, and he's just like loading himself up with firearms and then I put the black paint on him. And I thought, good man.
Yes.
Because inevitably it would have been a man.
Yeah.
When he looked in, James, sir, could you see Tom Baker in his Fourth Doctor costume sat next to two kids watching Doctor Who?
Yeah.
I can't, no, unfortunately.
Oh, it's momentary, but
I'd love to see that.
Okay, so coming up next.
Yes.
Next time, we're going to go back. We haven't watched a Frankenstein film since episode 2.
Oh, Lordy. My God.
So we are going to be watching, which one did I say it was going to be?
Monster from Hell.
We're going to be watching Frankenstein, The Monster from Hell. Is that right?
Yes.
Great title.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased to be back in Hammer territory. When did we last do a Hammer film?
Ooh, let's have a look.
I'm so glad to be back in Hammer territory because I feel a scholarly love for Hammer. Hammer films made me the man I am today. Let's face it.
They hammered you into shape, didn't they?
Yes. Didn't
we watch the one, the Dracula one, with not Big Chris Lee in it?
And we watched Bride of Dracula. That was the last
Bride of Dracula.
We watched that about to say, in November.
That's
quite a while ago, isn't it?
And we discussed that fantastic article that we've been saying about the subtext of that movie.
Which
elevated the whole thing, quite frankly.
Yeah, so
this one is probably the last gasp of the great canon of Hammer films.
Is this Dave Prowse one?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. That means we can talk about Dave Prowse loads.
Yeah.
Okay, so join us next time for Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell.
And Darth Vader. And the Green Cross Code Man.
Yeah. And the guy who's in Clockwork Orange.
Is he?
And the man, yes. And the man who genuinely believed he was going to be cast as Superman.
Oh.
But in fact, we'll get on to all of this. Yeah. All in good time.
And the man who thought his actual voice was going to be Darth Vader's voice.
His voice.
Yeah. And the man who was leaking all the plot elements for
yes, we've got all of this to come.
Yeah.
And so also, dear listener, if you ever ran into miserable Dave Prowse because Christ, he was miserable.
Charging 20 quid for his autograph.
Please do let us know.
Yeah.
I would like a good slew of miserable Dave Prowse
stories. Do not touch the robot.
Not touch the robot. More on that next month.
Okay. Okay, until then, happy day.
Hey, thanks for listening,
light,
everyone.
Peace.
You have been listening to The General Witchfinders. Support the show and continue the conversation at patreon.com/generalwitchfinders. Subscribe and spread the word at generalwitchfinders.com. Farewell, and don't have nightmares.
Well, there were some foreign menus that lent themselves to a song. All quite genuine, but all quite disgusting.
So to put you right off ever touching foreign food again, and to put us all into a proper holiday mood, let's remember the moment Doc went to Brighton to sing the Salmonella Serenade.
I go on holiday, I'm usually keen to sample foreign cooking and the local cuisine. But some folks vacationing in faraway venues find stuff that's quite unusual, they're listed on menus. There's tart of the house and there's ouzo with tit. A dish made of intestines wound on a spit. They've got scum of chocolate to tickle the palate. Fred rabbit, Fred chicken and even red mallet.
Fred rabbit, Fred chicken and also red mallet.
Stuffed pussy in season is my favourite dish. But just try my lesbian sauce on dish. And banana spoon, or cock mince with wine, and its little fried lardoons.
Feel well, feel terrible.
At the Bistro de Spleen, perfect English broken here. We're open to the public, lousy food, warm beer. Look, breakfast with diesel and a nice shishki bob. Made from hedgehog omelette and corn on the job. There's cold parts with salad. Maybe you tried large holes with vinegar. And fried ruptured prawns make your dinner quite complete. Oh, do come and see us, for you will repeat. You always remember your meal at the restaurant Terry B.
Oh, I don't feel well.
And down at the restaurant Purgatory, you can enjoy a nice knickerblocker glory, or maybe clap sandwich and eat you like roasts. How about droppings, goat? How about droppings, goat? They Dublin bag crams with harissa sauce. Hot sweat of the day for your second course. Some lovely pissed fruit. First pick with a little roast lion and mandolin dip. You can get anything you want at the Bugger Opera.
Aubrey and Anne's got meat. We've got all kinds of meat that you're wanting to eat. Aubrey and Anne's got meat. We've got all kinds of meat that you're wanting to eat. Aubrey and Anne's got meat. We've got all kinds of meat that you're wanting to eat. Aubrey and Anne's.
Hi, it's Ross from the General Witchfinders. Did you know that I also do another podcast with my friend David?
Hello. Well, my headphones are falling off. You're not taking this seriously, Ross.
David and I do our own supernatural research and investigations in our home county of Dorset. So, if you think that's up your street, why don't you give it a listen? It's Dark Darset, D-A-R-Z-E-T. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not natural.
Thank you.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, I put, thank Christ the AA have got involved. And but once again, this is where this is something that confused me a lot as a teenager, watching a lot of American films as well.
Yeah.
For our American cousins who may be listening to this, in this country, in Great Britain, the AA is the Automobile Association,
yes,
not Alcoholics Anonymous. In America, AAA is the American Automobile Association.
Yes.
So for many, many years, especially as a teenager, I was always really confused where they're like, oh, the AA, or, you know, and I was like, what? They had a problem. What? There was a problem with the spark.
John, didn't your nan have like AA membership number 4 or something?
I was going to bring that up. And then I thought, I've talked about this before on this podcast.
No, not on the podcast.
No.
Is that true? I thought I'd done it on the podcast. As far as I know, my great-grandfather, I think on my nan's side, was a member 00001 or something like that, because I think the AA started in West Yorkshire, or it had a regional service, and his so when you got the badge back then, stamped on it was your AA number to put on your car.
Yeah, your grill, wasn't it? On the outside of the car. Yeah.
And he was member number 1, and that was like, that was probably like 100 years ago.
There's an ITV Sunday tea time drama about that, isn't there? Setting up they should do one.
Right. Oh, yes. Not that there is. What's this?
I've missed that one. Yeah, Heartbeat?
Yeah, Robson Green being the first AA man.
Where there's literally no cars for him to fix.
Yeah.
Because there's only like one car in the whole area.
And it's a great-grandfather Pountney. Or Monkney.
Well, I think he would have been Haig. And he had a chain of sweet shops.
Oh. So there we go. This thing is right in itself.
There's a lot of money in sweets.
Yeah.
So she rings up. And she's on the line, and this is a bit like me ringing up CWR as a kid to do the quizzes, because there was no one else was listening to CWR, and I would win every week.
Oh, did you win?
Really?
What
did you win?
I think one time I won a Making of Star Trek book.
Ooh.
I'm trying to think. I won quite a lot, and eventually I was asked to go to the station
This is great, John.
Which is in Coventry. So CWR was Coventry and Warwickshire Radio, BBC. And it was a tiny audience because it was literally for Coventry and Warwickshire, which isn't the hugest area.
Yeah.
And then obviously next to Birmingham, which was Radio WM, which had a huge listenership. I think eventually, this is very boring.
It's good.
Meaningless twaddle or
it's
whatever.
Good, it's
moronic
good
twaddle, isn't
yeah,
it? So yeah, I was asked to go there and, I can't remember what I went and actually talked about, but I was invited on as the teenage fan of CWR.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing.
Which is out
there.
That audio's out there somewhere.
It would have been the same year I was on Kilroy.
God, what an exciting year of your life, Joe.
And also the same year that I was on the Ross King show, of course. And did either of you watch the Oscars a couple of weeks ago?
Were you on that as well?
No, it was fun to see that Ross King on the Oscars.
Yes.
Was he?
Yes.
Well, Ross King still presents live from LA.
I think I watched it on YouTube.
Still, so and he's had a lot of work done.
He has. But I can still remember the theme tune, which is that was the Ross King show, and then he was in Pebble Mill. So Pebble Mill is gone.
So your life was all downhill after that then, John, really? When you reach those giddy heights of...
I was recognised as John Pountney in Abergavenny the other day when I was... When I went for a coffee with friends, a man came over and said...
Were you on the Ross King show circa 1992?
A guy came over and said, is that John Pountney? He's a photographer that follows my work. Okay. That was quite strange.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I tried to hide in a cafe while I was ordering at the counter, but he kind of insisted on coming to talk to me.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
If you're listening, David, it was nice to meet you.
Yeah. If you're other person who downloads this show.
I was going to say, if we do have listeners in America who are members of the AAA, let us know. We'd like to hear from you.
Tell us your AAA stories.
Yeah. Do you live in Montana? Have you broken down in Montana?
But John, are you AA or RAC?
I think I'm RAC now. And to be honest, they're not very good. I had a lot of issues when I went to St. Ives in 2018 in my Rover 220, I think I had at the time. It wouldn't start. And the RAC wouldn't send an RAC van. They would only send a franchise guy out, and he was clueless and never got the car running. And in the end, I had to get a taxi to Mousel to buy some spark plugs, which I had to fit myself.
What?
Not nights on the road, are they?
And the taxi cost me 80 quid.
Bloody hell.
But it turned out that the driver was a lovely guy who had gone to school with Sean Ryder. took us on a little tour of all the beauty spots in that part of Cornwall because he felt bad for us because we were on holiday and couldn't drive anywhere. And then so when we left, I took him a load of cans or I can't remember if it was cans or bottles of beer. And it was lovely. He was a lovely guy. And, you know, those things happen in life where you have misfortune and then good fortune comes along and shows you the kind of milk of human kindness where you can end up hanging out with someone who was Sean Ryder's school friend.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's all my Patreon extra, because I'm going to cut that.
I was
leave
gonna
that in 100%, please, because I want to see those reviews.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.